everyone, and welcome to another episode of That's What Bea Said. I am your host, Bree at Breezy Clee. We got a full gang tonight welcoming back Brittany Mollis at Bird's Eye View. Hello, Brittany. Good evening.
Good evening, Bree.
I know this is so formal. I feel like I'm a British accent. Hello, Meredith. Welcome back at MCAN Sports.
Fancy ladies.
Fancy. I have my tea. I'm sipping on my cuppa.
Oh, man, ladies. Well, we wrapped up the Browns season. Feels weird to say that, and it's January.
Yeah.
Sad.
I feel so lost.
Like, and I do too. It hasn't really set in yet that they're done.
Right. And I sent this to you guys earlier in our group chat where I was just like, I was so lost this week that, with the exception of Tuesday because I had a hockey game, I've been going to bed at like 9 p.m. every night because I'm like,
it's amazing.
What what else do I do with my time? Like, I don't really have any football to watch at the moment. I don't have evening shows that take up my time. I'm just like, okay, I get home from work and then I make dinner and then I'm like, okay, I'll watch an episode of Degrassi on the Degrassi channel and then go to bed. Like, I don't know what else to do with my life.
You know what's back on? Cheers season 2.
Ooh, I might have to get back into that.
You're like, welcome.
Cheers?
Cheer.
Yeah, cheer.
Did you watch Cheer 2 years ago? It was like, it came out on Netflix pre-COVID. Like, I think it was February.
Like the bar show?
No.
The one about cheerleaders.
It's a docuseries.
Oh, no, I
don't. Oh my gosh, Brittany, it is so good.
I know Angela was into it because I know we talked about it with Angie a lot.
Yeah, Brittany, you should definitely watch season 1 and then you'll start getting into season 2. It's really good. I highly recommend it. It's
I will watch addictive. Cheers. Sometimes you wanna go.
Well, so I have to ask you guys before we get into, we're going to get into the wrap up of the season, cover off, because Brittany, we recorded last week, I think on a Tuesday, and then like all the drama happened,
of course,
the days following. So it, mm-hmm. It honestly feels like we haven't recorded for a month, even though we recorded 8 days ago.
Yeah.
So we'll get into happened. A little bit of that. Obviously, there were players that had done their exit interviews. Meredith actually had a chance to listen in to Coach Stefanski on Baskin and Phelps today. So she has some good insights from that interview. We'll talk about that. And then Andrew Berry spoke to the media earlier this week for the end of the season presser. And we'll wrap up with, the best and the worst of the season. And of course, as always, there's Twitter wars and then there's Facebook wars. Brittany is going to sound off.
That'll be a good one.
This is my first general in battle.
This is my first experience with Brown's Facebook. I've never made my way into that avenue before, and it is something.
Do you want to know the only time I ever stumbled upon the Browns Facebook page was when the whole kneeling for the national anthem thing was a huge deal back in the day, and I was like, I vow to never get on Brown's Facebook ever again in my life. And I've not.
It hasn't changed. I can promise you that.
Okay, I would expect nothing less.
Brittany, what inspired you to A, get on Facebook, and B, make your way over to the Browns Facebook page?
So I saw, what's his name, Big Play Dave.
Okay.
I saw his tweet, I think it was last night. It was either last night or the night before.
Oh,
where
yes.
Somebody on Browns Facebook commented, and they're like, you know, they made it through Hugh Jackson and, like, you know, all these coaches, like, since the beginning of the return of the Browns. You're just naming them off, you know, name after name. And then he's like, if they bring back Stefanski, this is where I draw the line. Like, this is the line. This is the line in the sand, sir. Kevin Stefanski is your line. Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I cannot wait. Get juicy. We can
cannot
probably
wait
do
to
an
go
entire,
in depth on that.
Yeah, an entire episode probably of just that. Okay. But we'll save that for the best. We'll save the best for last because you guys are all going to have to suffer through the rest of the things we're going to talk about. So I want to kick off with the media and the exit interviews that were done earlier this week. So we'll get into this, but there were some noticeable leaders who did not talk to the media. But those that did, John Johnson III, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa, and David Njoku all spoke to the media this week. So we want to talk about some of the points that came out of those, and I want to read into some of those as well. So first, John Johnson. He was pretty open in his session. He talked about the communication between the offense and the defense might be something to work on to play complementary football. He talked about the relationship with the training staff and maybe the need for yoga based on the soft tissue injuries. Also notable, John Johnson obviously came from the Rams, and he really has only experienced winning football. So I know people were kind of making fun of him about the yoga comment, but
of course,
I took it as like, hey, maybe we should listen to this guy because he's been in a different locker room and building before. That, hey, like, I don't think it's a bad thing to have different ideas to come to the table. But of course, you know, that quote gets pulled and everyone's like,
movie yoga, like, what's that gonna do?
So I feel like I feel like people make fun of the yoga comment for misogynist reasons.
Exactly.
Because yoga is
soul players.
Yeah, because like, yoga is associated with women. It's not necessarily associated with like the tough, I'm gonna squat 550 pounds type of workout. And then people make fun of him for it because it's like they don't consider it manly. And of course, you know, let's make fun of things that women like, sure. But I saw Danny tweet the other day that he tried yoga, and he made a comment about how it's a lot harder than he expected it to be. And I'm like, yeah, because I used to do yoga pretty regularly. I'm actually planning on getting back into it. And even though it's not necessarily something that's going to it's not like running or lifting really, really heavy weights, but it is challenging.
Oh my gosh.
And like the mind-body connection that you learn while doing yoga helps you out in every aspect of life, whether it's physical or not. And I love that John Johnson recognizes that. And even though it may have been a throwaway comment or sounded like a throwaway comment, I think he was dead set serious because I think he understands the benefits of doing things other than I'm going to deadlift 1,000 pounds. I'm going to, you know, squat 500 pounds, I'm going to bench press 300 pounds. You know, he understands that there's more to life than just picking up heavy things.
Oh, yeah. And, like, just to be clear for all those people who make fun of things like this, things that they don't understand, John Johnson could literally destroy you in every single athletic competition there is. I promise you. You don't know more about the human body, what it takes to be an athlete. You don't know more than John Johnson. You don't. I promise.
Agreed. I was really big into yoga post-college years, like specifically hot yoga. I am telling you guys, for all those people listening that doubt yoga, I have never been that strong in my entire life than when I was practicing yoga regularly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So good. So good. And my husband, I've done it with him. He hates yoga. Not because it's womanly, but because it's freaking hard and he can't do it. Go try it. I mean,
Danny was sore for like 3 days afterwards. Like,
oh, because
legit.
You use muscles that you don't even know that you have them. You will be quickly reminded when you do yoga that you have muscles that you didn't know were underneath all of the fat and skin that you have on your body. I'll just say that.
Right. What is it? Like, there's what is it? 206 muscles in the human body or something like that? I'm probably getting it wrong, but I know that there's a lot of muscles in the human body and yoga uses every single one of them.
That's crazy.
No doubt. I mean, Brittany, you'll laugh at this. I always was super embarrassed because I get really sweaty in my hands and my feet.
No.
Shocker. I would just like slide across my mat. I could not hold poses because there was so much sweat.
Do they not give you like a towel or something?
They do make yoga towels specifically that help you grip when you get sweaty. So, but anyway, that was like I had to overcome my embarrassment of my sweat in these classes. So not only was I getting stronger, but I had to get over this mental hurdle that stopped me every day from going into class because I was embarrassed.
There was a yoga studio in Strongsville that I used to go to pre-COVID, and I absolutely loved it. And I haven't gone obviously, since COVID, I'm pretty sure they're probably still open, but with like limited class numbers. But I don't know. There's just like something about being in a yoga class where nobody is judging anybody else. And the last class I went to, I remember it was probably like February or something of 2020. There's a girl who probably looked like she was 15 or 16, and she was there with her boyfriend, and he looked like he was dying. Like, she was hitting every single pose, and he was struggle busing the entire time. And I was like, go girl, show up your boyfriend.
The one thing you do, I caution you about, is like, your body, like, you start, like, the more you get through class, like, the more flexible you become, because you're doing all these different positions. But that also means that you start to get, like, your muscles just start to stretch out and expand and all this stuff, and it's really easy to pass gas.
Yes.
So I will just say, yes, just maybe just make sure that you're clean before you start.
Don't eat beans before you go to class.
Well, now I definitely... So, like, he wants me to go to yoga with him. Like, I've done yoga before and I really enjoyed it. But he's like, you know, I want you to go. Like, I think you'd be really good at it because, you know, I'm a pretty flexible person. But, guys, I've never farted in front of him. In 2 years, I've never farted in front of my boyfriend. Like, he doesn't think that I fart. What if I'm at a yoga class and then all of a sudden I just rip one? That would be... Do we just break up?
Blame it on somebody else. Just blame it on somebody else. That's all you gotta do. Be like, oh gosh, you know what, Brittany, I'll go with you because you guys go to the same gym as I do. I'll go with you, and I will take this bullet for you. Please. I will take I have no problem doing this. If you fart, you can blame it on me.
I'll be like, oh god, Meredith.
I'll be like, you know what, guys, I'm so sorry. I had red beans and rice for dinner last night. I'm so sorry.
No, I think this is a perfect opportunity to fart for the first time in front of him. It would be in yoga class. You guys could fart in sync. Synchronized farting while yogaing.
I have nightmares.
Breathe out and...
Oh, we should really thank John Johnson for the inspiration for this start of this podcast.
This is why we love John Johnson III so much. He was one of my favorite acquisitions in the off season, and... after one season with the Browns, that has not changed.
Agreed.
Another guy that we love and we fancy, Mr. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. So he also spoke to the media, obviously the rookie, coming off of a really good rookie year. He also, similar to what JJ3 said, he talked a lot about the brotherhood and the team needing to work on bonding, and said that they lacked chemistry that the team needed at times. And he also talked about welcoming a leadership role going into next season. I thought his answer wasn't really prompted by a question that specifically talked about their bonding, or, you know, I felt like he was just very open and forthcoming about some potential issues in the locker room that I know everyone was alluding to, but he was just very open about it. What did you guys think of his quotes?
Which, I mean, like, first of all, this is a rookie saying this, which I think,
right,
like, to me, that's like, wow, that's kind of jarring. And I know that there's not a lot of Notre Dame fans out there that probably listen to this, but he came from a place that was very connected and very solid. Like, those guys on that team were like his brothers. And then to come to an NFL team where there was clearly, and, you know, John Johnson spoke on it too, there was a problem between the offense and the defense. And, you know, Kevin Stefanski commented on it. He said, you know, because of COVID protocols and everything, like, we just weren't able to communicate the way that we needed to. And I'm paraphrasing here, but it was along those lines. And I'm not sure. I don't know that it begins and ends with, you know, COVID protocols, and you can't get super close. You can't do a lot of things that maybe you would normally do. But to me, it's pretty telling when you have John Johnson, who's, you know, a veteran, used to winning, went to a Super Bowl, and then you have a rookie coming in here saying these same exact things. The communication needed to be better. The chemistry needed to be better. There was obviously stuff going on behind the scenes that we're not privy to. But I was happy that these two specifically spoke up and said something. It was a little bit shocking because, like you said, Bree, like they weren't exactly prompted to answer this way, but they were being very honest and open, which I think is very refreshing.
It makes me wonder, because Baker had his little get-together in Texas last summer, and Jarvis was there, and OBJ was there, and a few others. And I understand he can't invite 53 guys down to Texas. That's just unreasonable. But I wonder if some of the guys on the defense were seeing that and being like, well, I want to go to Texas and hang out. You know?
Even if you look at their Halloween party, or if you look at, you know, Instagram posts from New Year's Eve, it's almost always just offense doing this.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
what I mean?
Like, you guys a message on my conspiracy was Baker was forthcoming in some of his own interviews that he did. Obviously not the exit interviews because he didn't talk to the media, but he had alluded to issues that he had to deal with internally when he had that interview with Alex Smith a couple of weeks ago. And I don't think there's necessarily any strife in the offensive room with Baker. I actually think it's the defense that is frustrated with their quarterback. Because when you look back at the season, the offense has really struggled for the most part and have been the most inconsistent piece of the team. The defense really, they ascended as the season went on and quite frankly kept the team in a lot of games they probably had no business being in based on how poor the offense executed. So my whole theory was that it's not necessarily Baker and his offensive teammates. It's the defense where there's maybe a little bit of strife. And I think both of these players that spoke would lead me to believe that maybe that is more so the case than like a beef with Baker and Jarvis, which everyone was, it was so weird on Sunday when Jarvis scored the touchdown. You went over and sat on the bench next to Baker and they were chatting it up. And everyone on Twitter decided that there was this narrative that existed that Baker and Jarvis hated each other. I'm like, no, you guys just made that up. Nobody actually said that they didn't like each other.
Nobody right? ever said that.
Oh my God. I am so over the made up narratives from random people on Twitter. I am over it. And well, I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit when we talk about the drama that unfolded last week, but nothing irritates me more than seeing people accuse media members of making up stuff for clicks and then turn around and do the exact same thing with their tweets. Like, they want lots of likes and lots of retweets, and so they'll be like, oh, we're proving the doubters wrong on this person. And it's like, nobody ever doubted that person. Nobody ever said that no. Jarvis and Baker don't get along. Where are you getting this from?
I have seen people in the past week dedicate all of their time and sort of rebrand themselves on social media to be their entire personality is now, I just attack Cleveland media. That's what I do now. Because it gets, you know, it. I learned last week that it's not a popular stance to ever, if as a fan, it's not a popular stance to defend Cleveland media. It's not. I got murdered in the past week for doing it. But it's so, and we'll get into this after, you know, this part, because there's a lot to get into. But I've literally seen people make it their entire identity to just pile on these people. And like, they get their rocks off on it. Like, this is really exciting for them to bully people. This is what they want to do.
Yeah, Cleveland is the only market that I know of that when the team is not doing well, people don't get mad at the team. They get mad at the media because, you know, we're the ones out there dropping passes.
Well, yeah.
I don't know. Fault. I do feel like Aditi, I think, takes a lot of heat from the Steelers fans because they think that she hates the Steelers and hates Mike Tomlin and
yes.
think she's very biased against the Steelers for whatever reason, which is hilarious because she's actually married to a season ticket holder for the Steelers. So I don't know why everyone would think that she would just outright hate them. She just does her job and reports right. things. And right. But it's funny, though, because the Browns fans, most of them adore Aditi, ourselves included. And I wonder, like, I hear these, I see these people saying things like, well, it's not the fact that Mary Kay is a woman, it's the fact that she spins lies and she is negative and she has this hidden agenda to sabotage the team. And they'll defend that point of view by saying, well, I love Aditi and I love Cammy Justice. And I'm like, well, no, like
that drives me nuts.
Cammy and Aditi, also very good, guarantee that they would do the same thing to them. Like, I think I saw someone say, respond to Cammy when she was quote tweeting or quoting a player and said something like, this is why I like you because you report facts. And I'm like, okay, but what if she writes an opinion piece and you don't agree with her opinion? You gonna hate right. her too?
And Mary Kay was quoting the exact same quotes that Cammy was because they were both in the exact same press conference. It's absurd. And one of the things that really annoys me is I only ever see these people propping up Aditi and Cammy in order to tear Mary Kay down. And it's like, you shouldn't be using your opinions on one woman to tear down another woman. Like, that's just so weird and so disgusting. And it's just...
Yes.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. So to wrap up the players that spoke, we'll talk about David Njoku from the offense. Nick Chubb also spoke, but, you know, Nick Chubb is Nick Chubb.
About three words. Yes, I think exactly. His press conference was 45 seconds long.
So David spoke about Baker Mayfield and obviously his contract or, you know, his potential to be in Cleveland. So with Baker, he said, we have all the confidence in Baker as well as any QB that steps foot in here. He also said, I love it here to my core. I want to be here for the rest of my career. And then when asked about a healthy Baker being back next year, he said, I'm excited to have everybody healthy and ready to go next season. So does anyone want to read into any of that? Brittany?
Let's speculate wildly.
Let's speculate wildly.
I don't think he meant it the way that some people were interpreting it. I can understand why, you know, people would take a closer look at that one, especially the last one. I'm excited. He was asked specifically about Baker, so I'm excited to have everybody healthy and ready to go next season. As well as any other quarterback that steps foot in here. I'm just going to say this straight up. I fully expect Baker Mayfield to be the starting quarterback next season. Fully, 100%. And this isn't me, like, saying, you know, Andrew Berry said the same thing, and I'm not, like, parroting him, but, like, just a feeling I get. I think they're just going to run it back, see how it goes. If it doesn't work out next season, then, you know, farewell. They'll figure it out. But, you know, Dave Njoku, he said what he said, and I think what he meant was just that exactly what he said. I want everyone to be healthy. You know, David Njoku's number one focus is not on Baker Mayfield. You know what I mean? Like, he needs the whole offense to be this. One thing that I really enjoyed about him, he grew so much as a player. You know, I would like to think as a leader of sorts. He is one of the longest tenured players on this team. I do believe that, you know, they'll work out a deal with him to keep him. I hope they do. And I think Dave Njoku just wants what's best for this team, period.
Also, there were so many people who were injured this year. I don't know that I've ever seen a Browns team more injured than they were this year. Like, Nick Chubb missed some time. Kareem Hunt missed a lot of time. Troy Hill missed time. Malik Jackson missed time. Like, so when he says, I can't wait for everyone to be healthy, that's why I truly believe it. Because Baker Mayfield wasn't the only person struggling through injuries. He was just the most front-facing person.
Yes.
Who was. Because a lot of the people who had injuries weren't ones that they could play through. Like, Kareem Hunt can't play through an ankle sprain or whatever it was he had that was a leg injury. He can't play through that. So all he can do is support his team on the sidelines. And so that's why I take Njoku's words at face value, because it wasn't just Baker who was injured this year.
Yeah. I'd like to pause here for a moment just to talk about a new podcast from the Players Tribune that launched called Blindsided. It is the first ever mental health podcast by Players Tribune, hosted by former NHL goalie Corey Hirsch and psychiatrist Dr. Diane McIntosh. The show will share moments for a variety of athletes when everything changed for them and mental health became the most important focus of their lives. It allows listeners to have an understanding of the different types of mental health challenges people face. And guests this season have included Cleveland's own Kevin Love, very big advocate for mental health, as well as Kurt Warner, who's been on the show. So if you guys have a moment, would encourage you to check this out. This is obviously becoming a forefront for a lot of athletes here. They go into breakdowns, insecurity, panic attacks, PTSD, addiction, sudden life changes, and ones that all require an athlete to toss aside their well-laid plans and answer the question, what's your next play? Blindsided is a podcast about sports, mental health, and life. Go ahead and check them out and let us know what y'all think. All right, so going back to some other leaders in the locker room that actually did not talk to media, and that would be Baker Mayfield, Jarvis Landry, and Myles Garrett. Also notable to mention that Jarvis has not spoken to the media since his charity event back in Thanksgiving, and Baker pretty much signed off with the quote tweet to Mary Kay saying clickbait. So that's how both of those players left the season. Is it concerning that these leaders did not address the media? What do you guys think? Meredith, I'll start with you.
I have mixed feelings about Baker Mayfield not speaking. I feel like he should have, because as long as he's healthy and as long as he's ready to go, he's the QB1 on this team. And I feel like that is his role, is to be a leader. So the fact that he didn't speak, I'm not super thrilled about. But I have a feeling that he probably didn't want to, just because of everything that exploded on social media last week. With Jarvis, I'm not as concerned. I would have liked to have heard from him more, but he's on his last year, and the Browns are going to have to figure out what they want to do with him. I don't know that they can bring him back for, what is it, $16 million, I think, is what his current contract is per year. So there's going to be a lot of negotiating, I feel like, between Jarvis and the Browns in the offseason, and if they can't come to an agreement, Jarvis isn't going to be back, which I really hope they come to an agreement, because I absolutely adore Jarvis Landry as a person and as a player, and I want him on the Browns. So the fact that he may not be back could have been a reason why he didn't speak. I would have liked to have heard from Miles, though, because Miles really is, you know, talk about one of the longest tenured guys on the team. He's it. Like, he was their number one overall draft pick in 2017, and he's been proving his worth every single year, and he's talked about his leadership. Kevin Stefanski has talked about his leadership. It would have been nice to have hear from him.
Brett, what are your thoughts?
So when it comes to Baker specifically, you know, I was listening to 92.3 this morning, and I heard Daryl Ryder bring up a lot of very good points about this. He mentioned that, so this isn't his words, this is mine. You know, we all have parts of our job that we don't really like doing, yeah. Right? Like, you know, that's a normal thing. This is what the part of the job that Baker seems to not like doing the most. He makes it very clear that he does not like talking to the media. And, you know, Daryl mentioned that this was an opportunity for him to sort of end the season on a good note, sort of change the narrative a little bit, because, you know, everything that happened last week was between him and a media member. He had an opportunity to sort of clear the air, end the season with something positive, say, yeah, I can't wait to get back next year. I'm going to take this off season to work on whatever I have to work on to sort of do my part to pull my weight in this offense. He had this opportunity to do this, and he chose not to do it. And to me, if you're the leader, you're the offensive leader. You're supposed to be leader of this team. If you're a leader, you take this part of the job pretty seriously. Like, this is your time to address. This is your time to sort of make your case. And the fact that there seems to be this tension, and honestly, it seems like it's always been like that with him in the media. There's this underlying tension that he really just does not enjoy talking to them. And I mean, to me, I would want that relationship to be as good as it can be, just to make my life easier, like, period. Selfish reasons. I would just want my life to be as easy as it can be. And if you let the media in a little bit, if you let them, you know, get to know you a little bit, do all these things to cultivate a friendly relationship, it could really work in your favor. But I don't think he's ever been really willing to do that. So it was disappointing that he didn't speak. Meredith, I'm with you on Jarvis. And, you know, I too wish we would have heard from him, especially after the OBJ stuff. I think that would have been a good time for him to say anything at all. But we didn't really hear much about that. And with Miles, I think Miles speaks enough, you know, and whether it be on the field or off the field. We've heard a lot from Miles this season. So I'm good if he just wanted to shut it down and, you know, say he didn't have the same problems that Baker Mayfield did with the media. Miles has always been really friendly, really open, really candid. And guess what, guys? It works to his advantage, doesn't it? Because how many bad things do you ever see written about Miles Garrett? Ever?
Yeah, he probably just wanted to go home and play with his dinosaurs.
That's
and watch
it.
Anime.
And you know what? I don't blame him. He put in his work this year. Good for him.
Listen, he has a beautiful dog, and I'm sure he was just like, I just want to go home and be with my animal, because I have those same feelings when I'm at work. I'm like, I just want to come home and be with my cat.
Same.
Yeah. Well, you brought up something too, Brittany, not only about there are things that you don't like doing at your job. Everybody experiences that. You also probably have worked with someone that you may not get along with, or you just may not see eye to eye on a lot of things together, but you still have to be an adult and sit in a meeting with them, interact with them, work on a project with them. I mean, these are just things that you have to deal with. And I always found Baker's personality very endearing. Like, I always thought that, like, I loved his brashness. I loved how he kind of went after people, you know, particularly Colin Cowherd, not necessarily Cleveland media members. But now it's starting to actually, like, grate on me a bit, where I find it actually more annoying than being endearing anymore. Because I go back to last year when they were winning and he had no problem with the media. Remember he was quoting like rap quotes. There were like hidden things in each presser.
Yes.
And he was having fun with it. And then you go back to 2019 with the Freddie Kitchens era where, I mean, that was a shitstorm of every media availability. Like, there was always something happening and it was not fun for anyone. But there's just this pattern of when things are going well, he's really easy to talk to. He seems to be enjoying himself. I mean, maybe he's a little bit annoyed. I think you can always kind of get from him, even when they're winning. He seems just annoyed, and maybe that's why he drops quotes about rap songs, because he's kind of treating it lightly and not as a professional necessarily. But yeah, I Baker, I thought he had an opportunity to stand up there and be professional and end this season. I don't care if he would have said anything about anything. I just wanted him to show up. He was at the last game. And so I was a little bit disappointed about that. And if I'm Miles Garrett, why would I show up for my media availability?
Like, true.
He's spoken many a times. Mm-hmm. He played in the final season of the game and spoke to the media after. I mean, in my opinion, Miles didn't have anything left to say.
No.
True.
He was good.
It's very true.
So I don't know, man. Baker's starting to aggravate me a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the, like, the chip on your shoulder attitude was kind of, it was endearing in college when, you know, he didn't get his shot at Texas Tech. So then he goes to Oklahoma as a walk-on and ascends to winning the Heisman Trophy. Like, that is such a great story because he had doubters and he went and he proved them wrong and it was great. But you can't rely on that mentality. You know, you can't create that scenario, especially when it's not there. And if people are doubting you in the NFL, it's because you're not playing well. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to beat up on Baker too much about this because I know he was injured and I know he was struggling and, you know, he's playing for his contract. And so he had a lot of reason to want to be in every single game. But, you know, people aren't, I don't know, you're not a kid.
Meredith, you hit the nail on the head when you said people aren't doubting you anymore just to doubt you. They're doubting you because your play is not up to par with what it should be.
Right.
That's it. So it's not like it's not you against the world anymore. It's you needing to look in the mirror and own up to it. I have not played well. I need to take some accountability. What do I need to do? That's what I want to hear from you. I don't want to hear from you that you're going to come back better than ever. How injured you are when you stood up there week after week and talked about how you were fine and how you were cleared to play and how you felt good and how you looked great at every practice and you were the best you were ever feeling. I don't need to hear that shit from you. Don't say it in the first place if it's not true. Because I don't feel bad for you when you go out there and you do suck because you stood there and you told me the opposite. So I'm done. I'm done with these excuses. I don't trust you.
Ooh, feisty Bree.
I'm sorry. I really want to like him, and I really want it to work, and I'm not rooting against him. And guess what, Baker? The fan base isn't rooting against you. It is in our best interest as fans for you to work out.
Absolutely.
It is.
Yep. Also, the media
is not...
Stop
making up a narrative that doesn't exist. If you need to do it for your own self, great. Let's not put it out there anymore.
No. Right, and the media is not rooting against you either, because no. I can say this from personal experience. It's a hell of a lot more fun to talk about a winning team than it is... a losing team. So despite what everyone on Twitter thinks, despite what callers on the radio think, despite what Baker Mayfield might think, the media is not rooting against you. The media is not rooting at all, to be perfectly honest.
And also the thing about, you know, the chip on the shoulder thing, that's cute, but eventually you have to prove something.
Yes,
like you can't just walk around with a chip on your shoulder with this attitude, like, you know, everyone's against you and
Unless you're Michael Jordan.
You have to go out and, like, prove your worth, dude. Like, that's part of the endearing part. And you're just, you got half of it. Now finish or stop. Like, we're done. I'm tired of it.
Yes, I agree. That's what, like, you know, you're in your fifth year. You're going in your fifth year. Then enough of the, like, chip on my shoulder. You were the number one pick in the draft. Your expectation was to turn this franchise around. Going to the playoffs one time in 4 years is not turning the franchise around. Sure, you got us on a better track than we were at, but that also took a coaching staff, a scheme, smart people in charge to get you in that position. Like, the expectation is you get to the playoffs, you're going to continue to do that. We need some consistency right now. I could give two shits about the chip on your shoulder when you make it to the playoffs. Like, that's your new bar, Baker. Your bar is not 1-15 and 0-16 anymore. Your bar is a winning record and the playoffs every single year. So figure it out.
Amen.
You know, someone asked me. I don't even remember who it was. They seem to pick on Baker for his height. You know, like, can he even see over the line? Like, what if Baker was taller? Like, are you mad at him because he's short? I'm like, okay, I'm also a fellow short person. So I do empathize with him on his height and that always being a, like, disadvantage in your competitive sport that you play. But here's the thing, guys, and I'm not saying this to be mean, but I think we know what a tall Baker Mayfield looks like, and it's Carson Wentz. Right now, to me...
That's damning.
To me, I think Baker is better than Carson Wentz. But when you look at their performance and the lack of consistency between the two, like, Carson Wentz has had an up and down career. And I know he was plagued by injury as well. Like, he started off with, quite frankly, almost an MVP. He was heading down a path of an MVP season. And he has had so much inconsistency in his play. I mean, you saw them just fold against Jacksonville. Can you imagine if that were the Browns in a win and in playoff scenario and Baker Mayfield played that way?
Yes, I can imagine that exact scenario happening. Like, that's also the problem.
If we okay, so if we want to talk about teams absolutely crumbling under pressure, I never, ever, ever want to hear anyone complain about Kevin Stefanski's play calling ever again after seeing Joe Judge run a quarterback sneak at 3rd and 9. Okay? Okay.
That was like a Freddie Kitchens. I mean, that is Freddie Kitchens calling the plays for the Giants? Was that him?
Holy crap. Was it?
It probably was.
Oh, boy.
He's with the Giants, right?
He is, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. They'll probably give him a head coaching job. All right, so I'm not trying to be super harsh. I do think Baker is better than Carson Wentz, and I do think that his upside is better than Carson Wentz, but I do think it's up to Baker to put in the work.
Sure. Also, I think it's funny that you bring up Carson Wentz because we're talking about him a little bit later on.
Oh, I know. So we'll get into that. So let's move on to Andrew Berry's end of season presser. We'll wait until Meredith gets back to talk about Stefanski here. But you know, we know about both of them that they are, and you wrote this, Brittany, the kings of coach speak. They don't really show emotion. They don't tend to offer much insight. And you know, what's interesting is when we went through this season last year, when we had the winning season and we had the success, nobody really ever talked about this. But this year, in this season, this actually seems to bug a lot of fans. Does it bother you, Brittany?
No. So one of the things that I very distinctly remember us talking about before was one of the reasons why I really like both Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski is because I really appreciate smart, calm leaders. For me, that's the jackpot. When there's something going wrong, if you know there's some sort of chaos happening, I look to smart, calm people to be like, okay, what should we do here? And also, I think it's very important for the leaders, you know, whether it be coach, GM, you know, whatever. It's important for them to keep any problems or anything in-house. Like, that's important to me. So when they're not emotional, they don't really get into details about things, they are not upfront about any kind of, you know, discourse happening within the organization, that's good. Like, that's a good thing to me. Because what you don't want is, you know, things like the Colts GM talking. What you don't want is things like, you know, Freddie Kitchens sounding off on the mic. Or, you know, you look at the difference between Stefanski and Hugh Jackson. When Hugh Jackson was very adamant about, oh, I drive the bus. And, like, yes, he was very open about things. So, no. And, like, even just look at, okay, in your own life. Like, me and Danny could be having, like, the worst time ever. We could be at each other's throats, killing each other. But guess what? On social media, I'll be like, oh, I love him so much. Because you protect it. That's what you do for things that are important to you. You know, you have in your mind that you're going to fix it. You're going to do whatever you can to address any problems. You know, go through the motions of improving. And you don't need the public to know everything that goes on behind the scenes. I appreciate when I don't know these things. I do think it's refreshing that you had players saying things, but players are different than coaches and GMs. I expect coaches and GMs to always keep a level head and not share everything with us.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I do know that people, when I think about players and you know, even in my own career of managers that you've had and who you may have succeeded under, like, do you want to be managed by someone who is calm under chaos or doesn't seem to let stress get to them? Or do you want someone that is clearly frazzled? Because typically what happens is the way that a manager or a leader reacts, that tends to cause panic from everyone underneath, whether they mean to or not, whether their intentions may be good. But if they're flustered, that typically doesn't make people that are reporting to you or watching you for the next move feel very good about what's to come. So I'm with you. My mom, she texted and she was so funny. She was like, I just want to see Kevin without the play sheet in front of his face. I think he's distracted. You know, she's like, they're always showing him on camera with the damn play sheet in front of his face and they're on defense. I'm like,
mom. I think she has ulterior motive. I just think she wants to see his face. Which, who could blame her?
Guys, we're not allowed to call him handsome, okay?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
How dare you?
I mean,
he's ugly.
Gross.
If you look at Kevin Stefanski and say that is not an attractive man, I feel like you need to get your eyesight checked.
Yeah, but men are allowed to say that. Because that is a concerning statement. Men are allowed to say that. We are not, because any kind of, you know, information that we have, like, it just gets reduced to, well, you think he's hot. Okay.
And also, you can't be smart and good. You can't be smart and good looking, apparently. You can't be both.
Absolutely not. Especially, you went to... You played Ivy League? You went to an Ivy League school? No, you can't do that. You don't know anything about football.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Because let's not forget that Andrew Berry also went to an Ivy League school.
Oh, I cannot wait to show you the... Or I'm going to read you these Facebook comments. You're going to die.
Oh, I cannot wait to get here.
oh, my God.
So the one other thing about Andrew Berry is it was very interesting because he obviously got drilled about Baker, of course. And, you know, I didn't expect him to answer the questions any differently than how he did. And when he was asked about Baker, he said he fully expects Baker Mayfield to be the starting quarterback in 2022. So obviously, if you're a Baker bro, you were thrilled to hear these answers that he gave in the press conference. But on the other hand, like, for those that are not staunch Baker fans, they also seem to have found what they were looking for in his comments. So how did you guys interpret his comments on Baker?
Okay, firstly, the Baker bros that were doing victory laps, and I saw it because they were in my mentions, they were in other people's mentions, being like, oh, I guess you're upset that Baker's coming back. Like, they were taking victory laps around the fact that Andrew Berry said that Baker Mayfield was going to be back in 2022. And I'm like, that is absolutely absurd to me because, first off, one of the things that I appreciate about what Kevin Stefanski has said about Baker and what Andrew Berry has said about Baker is that it's consistent. Like, they don't look like hypocrites for saying, oh, yeah, we should have sat Baker. No, like, when the medical staff is telling you that he's okay and he's saying that he's okay and they go out and play him and even postseason, as long as he's healthy and he's ready and he's feeling good, he is our QB1. Like, Andrew Berry is not going to get up to the podium and be like, you know what, guys, our relationship is really strained. We're going to look to move him in the off season. That's never, ever, ever going to happen for so many reasons. But mostly it's because the GM position is a tactical position. So if Andrew Berry comes and speaks out of character like that at a podium, not only does it undermine his confidence from his organization, from the Haslams, from Kevin Stefanski, from the team that he manages, it also lets every other GM know what he's doing. You know, the man is constantly playing cones of Dunshire. I've said this over and over again. It is about the cones. So he's not going to get up to the podium and be like, yeah, we're going to try and move Baker in this offseason. Because then every single general manager in the league says, okay, well, they don't want him. Let's see how low we can go. Let's see if we can lowball him. Like, you don't give away your tactics at the podium. That's dumb. So for the Baker bros taking the victory lap, just settle down. And I imagine Baker will be back in 2022 for the pure fact that for the quarterbacks that are available that the Browns could target in free agency, Baker's better than most of them. And I know that it might be a frustrating thing to say, but it's true. Baker is better than a majority of the quarterbacks that are going to be available. And I can't see someone like Aaron Rodgers coming to the Browns next year. So I don't know. I feel like people lack the ability to think critically and they just take literally everything at face value and they just don't have a lot of comprehension in what they're hearing. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. But, you know, Andrew Berry's not going to, you know, get up at the podium and be like, yeah, no, you guys don't want Baker. We're done.
Right. Why would anyone else want the damaged goods if we don't want him, right? Well, I think maybe some of the fans expect them to maybe be different, similar to what the Colts GM did when asked about Carson Wentz. And it's funny because we were just talking about Carson Wentz. But, I mean, he literally just laid it all out there. He said, at the time, we felt it was the right decision. I'm not going to make a comment on who is going to be here next year and who is not. So, if Andrew Berry would have stood up there and said that, do you feel he would have? First of all, the fan base would have killed him.
Yes.
Right? Yep. You wouldn't feel good about that, even if you agreed with the statement. You don't want to. At what point do you show your cards? You don't show your cards. Really smart people know this stuff. You would never even imagine yourself in a setting where you're completely unprepared for a meeting and you walk into the meeting and you kick off the meeting saying, holy shit, I'm not prepared to do this. No, you would stand up there and you would put whatever you could. You would put it together and try to tie it up in a pretty bow, even if you had no idea what the hell you were talking about or if it was the opposite of what you were thinking in your head. You would still do something to make it look like you had everything prepared and you were smart, right? Yes. You would never put yourself in that situation.
So can I tell a story that's going to make me look like the biggest nerd in the world, but I almost don't care. So when I was in high school, I slacked off a lot, but in like weird ways. So in one of my classes, senior year, it was either junior or senior year, and it was towards the end of the year and we're done, not paying much attention. One of my classmates brought Risk to class and we would spend the entire class playing Risk. I went to one of the highest rated high schools in the country, public high schools. So that should tell you all you need to know about American public education. But I remember we were playing a version called Capitals, where instead of trying to take over the world, you just try and take over everybody else's capitals because it was a faster version. And one of the guys I was playing with was saying, oh yeah, I always choose Madagascar because it's an island and there's only two ways in and out. It's a harder capital to seize. So the very next game, I made my capital Cape Town and got him out in like the first round. Because I'm like, okay, so you told me that your tactic was to pick the island off the coast of West Africa. So then I pick a capital in South Africa and suddenly you have no fortress. So you're dumb. And that's what Andrew Berry doesn't do when he gets up to the podium and say, you know what, guys? This is my strategy. This is who I'm after. This is who I'm trying to trade. This is everything that's going on behind the scenes at the Cleveland Browns. It's open season in Berea, baby.
It would have been funny if you did that, though. That's like some WWE stuff. Cue the music.
And then he, like, walks out, like, but, real like, American and...
The fact that you like, I read a quote like this and I cringe because, again, like, there's such an advantage to having a smart, calm general manager who, even if he felt this exact same way about Baker Mayfield, which I guarantee he does not, even if he felt, he would never say this because, number one, like, say what you want about Carson Wentz, that's still a professional football player. Like, this is his livelihood. I'm not a fan of him, but, like, this is his life, really. And to just say, just to out him like that publicly is kind of, it's pretty hurtful. And you're not giving him the opportunity to save face at all. You're basically just telling the public, yeah, we made a mistake with him, so I'm not going to talk about who's going to be here next. Like, that's harsh. And yeah. I'm very happy, you know, call it coach speak and say they're robots and, you know, whatever you want. But, like, give me that over what Chris Ballard said 100 times out of 100.
Or even Freddie Kitchens or Hugh Jackson in their press conferences.
Like, right.
The Hugh Jackson press conferences were a mess. Freddie Kitchens press conferences were a mess, and I feel like that was just kind of indicative of everything that was going on. And leadership starts from the top down. So when you have a general manager who's cool, calm, collected, and always says the right thing, and you have a head coach who's cool, calm, collected, and always says the right thing, I think that speaks volumes to the leadership that's on the team. Like, I know people may think differently because of how poorly the season went this year, but Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry have been consistent in their messages since day one. They have been consistent in their demeanor, how they address people, how they treat people. And that still gives me so much confidence in both of them. And honestly, Baker Mayfield's not a bad quarterback. He just played really, really badly this year. And I think if he gets past whatever mental block he has, and exactly what Mary Kay said in her article, that the whatever rift is going on between Baker Mayfield and the rest of the team, that gets fixed, and this is going to be a completely different team next year. And you're going to have everybody on the same page, and it's going to be so much better. So I still have confidence in Andrew Barry to get things right, and I still have confidence in Kevin Stefanski to get things right.
Well, speaking of Kevin Stefanski, Meredith, he was on your show, Baskin and Phelps, this morning. Can you share some things with the listeners that really stood out to you? And if you haven't had a chance to listen to it, you still can, because you can rewind and hear it. I thought it was great. Right. I thought he was more open with you guys and the team than he was in any press conference. And I thought it was great that he did it, because I felt like you kind of got to know him a little bit more than what we do right now at this point.
Yeah, so Kevin Stefanski is insanely charming, and he's got a really fun personality, and that never comes through in the press conferences because he's all business. So I think in sitting down in this one-on-one setting, or technically it was a two-on-one setting, he's a lot more comfortable in just having a conversation versus having questions being fired at him from multiple different people, whether it's over Zoom or in a press conference. And it is really, really easy to see why so many people love him, because coming out of Minnesota, there was just nothing but good things said about him. Like, I've got friends who are diehard Minnesota Vikings fans, and they are still to this day distraught that Kevin Stefanski left the organization. So I think his personality really came through. And a few of the things that he talked about, I really liked. So he talked about the fans, and he acknowledged how important the fans are. I think one of the direct quotes was, you know, without fans, we don't have a game. And, you know, what Browns fans, Kevin Stefanski, he does ignore the outside noise, and he's very good at it, but he's also well aware of what you guys say. And he even said that the criticisms of the team were valid. He thinks it's fair to criticize the team when they're not doing well, just as it's fair for the team, for the fans to be glowingly praising the team when they're being successful. He said that's fandom, and even said, you know, I'm not too far removed from fandom himself. So he gets it. And I liked his comments about that. He was very positive about Baker. He was very complimentary of Baker. You know, he never, like I said, consistency in the message from day one. He never wavered from the message. He talked a little bit about OBJ, and he did sound a little regretful that it didn't work out. But, you know, some things you can't force, and I think that's one of those situations. He was very, very glowing about Myles Garrett and talking about his leadership position. And he's also not going to run the ball every single play, no matter how many times you tweet, run the ball. That's just it. He addressed the run game, and Brittany tweeted some stats about the run game as well. And he acknowledged, like, you can't run the ball every single play. You have to find a balance between running and passing, and you have to overcome the defense. And so he acknowledged all of that. Yeah, I mean, and it was a great interview. He even said, and this kind of made me laugh a few times, he said Cleveland media was nice compared to Philadelphia media, which is one of the areas that he's used to, because, you know, Philadelphia media is a little more, they're a little more brash. And he even told our host today, he was like, you know, if you guys called me a moron, I'd probably feel more at home. So I just, he's hilarious.
You should get on charming. Brown's Facebook.
He's charming and he's funny. It's a great interview. Like, it's up on the 92.3 The Fan website. It's on the Odyssey app. Like, it's everywhere. You'll be able to listen to it, and I highly recommend it, because he really did. He had an opportunity to let his personality, you know, out of its cage, without ever, you know, losing
who he is.
The message that he wants. Yeah, without losing who he is and without losing the message that he wants to get across.
Brittany, anything to add?
I'm not allowed to say anything nice about him.
Okay, fine. Fair. Understood. Do you guys want to move into the 2021 wrap-up? Do you want to go over these really quickly? We have some quick hitters here that we can go over, and then we'll get into Twitter wars and Facebook.
Let's do it.
All right. Okay, guys, we're going to kick off with best win of the season. Brittany, what was it for you?
I mean, of course, it's Cincinnati. That was the only game this season where it was fun to watch.
I was going to say, Meredith, I don't know if you have a different game, but I couldn't think of another one that was better than that.
Yeah, that was the first one that came to mind. And I would almost put, even though it was a loss, I would say bear with me.
Good Lord.
I have a point. The game against Kansas City, I know it was a loss, but honestly, we kind of felt like it was a win almost coming.
We'll
away
say
from
that's
it,
right?
the best loss of the season. Now in hindsight, to me that's the worst loss of the season, because you look back at it and you're like, you think about like, oh, if we only knew what was going to actually transpire.
True.
But I mean, Baker played really well in that game. The defense played well in that game. Like, there was a lot of really positive things that came out of that Kansas City game. It's just unfortunate that it didn't end in a win. So, but yeah, best win, actual win, and not fake win of the season. Not the best real win, not moral victory, was easily the Cincinnati game.
All right, so then worst loss of the season. We might have the same one here, although there are more losses than we would have liked.
There's a lot to choose from.
It's a big list.
For me, it's the Steelers for like Halloween game.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's a good choice.
I was going to say the loss to the Patriots, just because that was just, it had such promise because it started with a Browns touchdown and then the Patriots got a touchdown. And we're like, okay, you know what? It's tied 7-7. Let's get the ball back. We'll do our thing. And then suddenly it's 14-0, 21-0, 28-7, I mean. And it just like the Patriots just kept piling and piling and piling. And it was like that Simpsons gif where he's like, stop, he's already dead. Like, that's how I felt by the third quarter of that game.
Worst loss would it was the Raiders. And that may seem like a weird choice, but that was the one where I felt the worst afterwards. Mm. That was the worst I felt in years about the Browns, just because, you know, everything was set up for them to, you know, sort of be the underdog in this story. Like, they were missing so much. You know, there was just such hope that they could pull through. Because that was, looking back, that was almost like a must win.
Yes,
Had they won that, who knows what would have happened. But that was one that they just lost in the final few seconds. And that hurt. That was the one that hurt the most this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other one was the Ravens, when Lamar threw 4 interceptions. And
oh, God. Yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah.
We couldn't do anything. And then we had to wait 2 weeks to play again. Remember how, like, bad that felt coming off that game? Ooh. Mm-hmm.
There were 3 years in between the first and the second Ravens
exactly.
game.
Yes. Agreed.
Never been a longer wait.
Okay, well, moving into something more fun, I guess. Browns MVP. Who you got?
It's got to be Miles.
That's what I would say, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, he has been so consistent and such a rock on this team since day one. Like, he came in, and his rookie season was 0-16, and he has never wavered since his rookie year. And I think it's frustrating that he should have been in contention for Defensive Player of the Year, and he's not going to be, because he absolutely deserves it.
Yeah. The other one that's probably not super, I don't know if popular is the right word, but Joel Bitonio and the role that he played this year in, like, he switched over to left tackle for how many games? Was it 2 games?
Yeah.
And just, and like, dominated.
The production at left tackle didn't even drop. And it's so funny, because I know one of our concerns with Jed Wills when he was drafted was he normally played right tackle at Alabama because he was covering for a left-handed quarterback. So we were worried about that, and there's, you know, footwork this, footwork that. Like, it's not, and if you talk to any offensive lineman, they'll tell you, like, tackle is a different position from guard and everything else. But then Joel Bitonio is just like, I'm gonna do everything. Let me right. do it. Although I feel like I don't know if it was him that spoke, but he was like, all right, I'm good with left tackle. Let's get Chad Wills back. So, you know, he's not trying to take somebody else's position. But yeah, I mean, he was a quiet star this year.
Yes. All right, best off-season addition.
I'm going to say, so I would have said Troy Hill had he been more productive, but I think the injuries got to him. I'm going to say John Johnson III. That was probably the best off-season addition, in my opinion. He really, him or Jadeveon Clowney. Crap, mm-hmm. I can't decide.
I was going to say Jadeveon, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I was like, I'm so obsessed with Troy Hill and JJ III. Just because I love the two of them so much, and I thought that they were going to really bring some dynamics to this, to the defense, and they really did. But like Jadeveon Clowney, man, I was so excited when the Browns signed him, and I hope he comes back.
Me too. I really like him. I like him opposite of Miles a lot. Mm.
Great team.
Anyone else, Brittany?
No, I mean, again, Andrew Berry did a fabulous job in the offseason acquiring these guys, and to me it's Jadeveon Clowney, like, yeah, hands down.
Mm-hmm. Most impressive rookie. Brittany, I feel like we know your answer here. Go ahead.
Can I just say that I remember before leading up to the draft, you know, people were concerned that Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah was undersized for the position. They were concerned about, you know, what he could bring to this defense. Would he fit? Andrew Berry found a place for him to fit. Joe Woods utilized him exactly the way he needed to be utilized. And the most impressive thing about him is not just his speed, but the force in with which he tackles people. He tackles mm-hmm. differently than everybody else. Yeah.
Which is much
needed. It is really, like, it's a clinic watching him tackle.
And he gets dudes into next week.
He does. Like, I mean, he is a killer out there. And I could not, I knew that he was going to be a good fit. He exceeded even my expectations.
Yeah. I would say, too, Greg Newsome, both him and Greg Newsome on the defense played significant roles this season. Yes. Mm-hmm. And obviously, that was a defense that was completely revamped. So to come in and step in and automatically make an impact, like, that's a lot for a rookie to handle, and they did it, and they made it look easy.
Yeah, and they sort of became, like, I think they're leaders, like, in the making.
Yes, agreed.
Both of them.
Very smart.
Remember how everyone hated Andrew Berry for about 23 minutes?
Yes. During draft night? When he drafted Greg Newsom instead of JOK.
Yeah. And then wound up getting JOK in the second round anyway. Yeah. There's this time period of like 20 minutes where everyone thought that Andrew Berry was
I thought
the
Brittany
worst.
Though was gonna cry. We were doing that live show, and I thought Brittany was going to just melt away.
My heart was so set. I really thought that I had manifested it into the first round. Little did I know, I just had to wait another night.
Right.
And Andrew Berry had my back. He did it.
He did. Yeah. He knew. Listen, he knew. He was like, Brittany, this one's for you. With the whatever pick in the NFL draft.
The 52nd pick.
The Cleveland Browns select Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah.
And the crowd goes wild.
Just for Brittany Mollis.
Right. Okay, most improved player.
I'm going to say Grant Delpit.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got better as the season went on.
He did.
For sure.
And my other choice, obviously, was David Njoku. I don't know that he's, like, super improved. I think they just relied on him more in the offense. I think he's always been an athletic freak. He's a very good tight end, like, sure hands. I don't think that much has improved, you know, as him as a player, but I just like that he got more involved. He was the touchdown leader this year. Mm-hmm. You know, for a long time, he was the receptions leader. Like, he was a big part of this. So, you know, those two would be my answer.
Yeah, David Njoku was going to be mine. And just because I think he showed that when you put him in a position to succeed, he lives up to expectations. And I think that's really what he showed this year. And then in his postseason press conference, like, he was just so in love with the city of Cleveland and in love with the Browns and wanted to be here. Like, you could tell that everything he said was genuine. And I know that what he says in press conferences is, you know, independent of what he does on the field for the most part. But yeah, I would put David Njoku for my most improved.
I was going to go with, and this is coming off of last year, still a very good player last year, but kind of just I think, solidified the importance of his role on the team. And Denzel Ward. I felt like last year, there were some question marks about him. And, you know, would he be a guy that we would sign long term? There are a lot of question marks about his future. And I just think he really came on this year. Mm-hmm. He made so many impact plays. And when you want to talk about, like, a small guy, he makes some big hits, too. I mean, he was a difference maker on the defense. And it was just awesome watching him blossom this year.
Also, awesome, Mac Wilson.
Blossom. Yes!
Mac Wilson had a very solid year. And this was somebody that a lot of people wrote off. A lot of people thought that he wouldn't even make the roster. He did. And when called upon, he did a good job.
Yeah, I also, too, liked the fact that they seemed to find a good role for him. He didn't need to be more than what they needed him to be this year. Last year, I felt like they needed him to be more than what he could offer the team. And I think this year they figured out a way to make him work. And he did well when he was called upon, to your point.
Yeah.
Biggest disappointment.
Well. I mean, are we going to say it? I feel like we're all saying
should we go on three? One, two, yes. Three. Baker
Mayfield.
Oh, I was going to say Austin Hooper.
Okay, I'm gonna do like a tangent for biggest disappointment. My biggest disappointment was Jarvis Landry as a quarterback because he had a perfect QBR in 2020. He was like 4 for 4 or 5 for 5 or something, and then, you know, when Kevin Stefanski called those banana plays this year, I don't think he got a single one of them. So biggest disappointment is Jarvis Landry throwing.
Okay,
receiving.
For one, I didn't know. Here's like what's really sad. I did not even think about the quarterback for any single one of these.
Really?
That is good and bad.
I know. I was like, he was so far off the radar for me that I just completely wrote him off.
Wow.
I know. Biggest disappointment too on defense. Meredith, you're not going to like me for this, but John Johnson kind of disappointed me. I don't know. I just feel like he wasn't I don't know if it was his utilization or he just kind of looked lost out there sometimes.
Well, he didn't have the same production with the Browns that he did with the Rams.
Yeah. And I was expecting him to, I guess. So maybe it was just maybe year two, you know, things will kind of gel and click a little bit more together. But, and Ronnie Harrison, too. Like,
oh, yeah.
He made some really stupid decisions. So he was on my shit list most of the year, too. And I had big expectations for him, too. That's anyway, fair. I guess disappointment, we had a lot more than we probably wanted.
Yeah. That's what happens when you're under 500.
It's Baker, right? It has to be.
Yeah.
It's Baker. But Austin Hooper is a good option, too. I really hope Sir Falls Lot is not here next year. I don't want him around.
Well, I mean, and I feel like Baker does deserve biggest disappointment because he got fifth-year option while other guys in his draft class, like Nick Chubb, got their extensions. Mm-hmm. And this was the year that he needed to go out and show everyone, including, you know, the fans and the team, that, yes, I am the future of this franchise. I am your franchise quarterback. I am playing for my life. And I'm going to play for my life. And there were so many times, and I think I brought this up with you guys before, but someone, it was Jason Lloyd, tweeted out a stat about Baker Mayfield had like a 17 QBR in like the last 2 minutes of a game when the Browns had the opportunity to win. Like, there were so many times where the Browns had the opportunity to win and Baker could have carried the team on his back to a win, and he didn't. You know, and that's what fans wanted to see, and that's what he needed to do to earn his extension. But instead, he's got one more year with the Browns, and if it doesn't work out, he's gone.
Mm-hmm. All right, so area that needs improved the most this offseason?
Wide receiver.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just,
One could argue the quarterback as well.
Yeah, but I mean, there were a lot of things that weren't necessarily Baker's fault, and you could even see when Case Keenum was playing, like there were a lot of dropped passes.
Yeah,
there were
a lot of lack of separation.
There are a lot of passes that hit the numbers and then hit the ground, and I'm like, listen, if I can catch, you can catch. Like if something hits me in the chest, I'm catching it most of the time.
Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, I think we had high expectations for the wide receiver position because of OBJ and Jarvis and that tandem.
Oh, yeah, we said embarrassment of riches. That's what we called right. it at one point.
But OBJ...
Joke's on us.
But OBJ left. Jarvis Landry didn't get as much production as we hoped out of him. Anthony Schwartz dropped a lot. Bleh. Hollywood Higgins dropped a lot. Like, it just... and tight ends falling. I know that's not the wide receiver position, but yeah, like
it's so annoying. It is so annoying.
They had a case of the dropsies this year.
They did. Well, all right. Well, the much awaited Twitter wars and Brown's Facebook. Brittany, the people have stuck around. Let's get into it.
Which ones we want to get into first?
Oh, whatever. However you want to go. Whichever direction you want to go.
God, this could go so many ways. Okay, we'll start with Twitter. We'll save the really good stuff for last. So, this week... Now, first of all, Kevin Stefanski should actually put me on the payroll for doing all this PR for him. Tired of working for free. Because this week he had me looking up statistics.
Send him an invoice.
Let me just tell you, I make a living with words. I had to take remedial algebra in college 3 times before I passed it. So numbers are not my strong suit at all. But I had to find out. I had to see what all these other people were seeing. I had to see if there was any validity to it. Well, guess what, guys? There's not much validity to it. There's not.
Of course not.
So if someone like me can take the time, go through these numbers, do just a little bit of math to come to an educated opinion, these people can also do it. They're just not doing it.
No.
So
they watch the tape.
We gotta go by the eye test.
Yeah, it, our feelings, you know, it doesn't look right. Just because you think something is a certain way doesn't mean that it is. So
facts don't care about your feelings,
they
Dale.
Don't. So the thing that I shared this week, you know, people, it's amazing that it took Stefanski until game 17 to realize we have an elite rushing attack. 37 called runs compared to 28 called passes. Should have been like this the entire season. So I just looked up on, you know, PFF or whatever it was. And Browns rushing attempts in 2020. Now, mind you, I did this because, you know, the Browns were good last year. The offense was outstanding last year. Everything worked the way it was supposed to work. So in 2020, the rushing attempts, 495, which was fourth in the NFL. 2021, 485, which was ninth in the NFL. Now, there's a 10-attempt difference, but if you consider the fact that Kareem Hunt missed 9 games, Nick Chubb missed 3 games, guess what, guys? It's not that big of a deal. And then, so the passing attempts in 2020, they threw for 501 times, just 28th in the league. Now, mind you, the rushing was 4th, the passing was 28th. So in 2021, the rushing was 9th. The passing was also 28th. They did it 520 times. So this idea that, well, you know, Kevin Stefanski is play calling. It worked last year and it didn't this year. It mirrored each other. The offense mirrored each other. The difference was that the quarterback could not throw the ball. And when he did, a lot of times the wide receivers weren't helping him.
Yes.
The play calling, and he needs to make adjustments. He needs to run. If you see that your quarterback is struggling, he needs to make adjustments. He needs to run the ball more. I said, you know, a running back's shelf life is very short, like anywhere from like 3 to 5 years. On average, it's 3 years. Did you really want to? And if you're doing this to hide the quarterback, which they would have been, because they said, well, he's struggling. You need to rely on the running game more. fine, but you're going to run Nick Chubb into the ground in order to hide the quarterback who is not good enough to take you deep into the playoffs anyways. Because at some point you have to rely on your quarterback to throw the ball, especially when you're trailing, which they had been in a lot of the fourth quarters specifically this season. So I guess they're mad that Stefanski didn't think that it was appropriate or smart or sustainable to run the only really good, healthy running back they had into oblivion to hide the quarterback and maybe sneak into the playoffs and be in first round exit. That's my whole point here.
Yeah, and if you want to go by the eye test, Nick Chubb got stuffed in the middle a lot.
They stacked the box a lot.
There were these many times where the run play just didn't get off.
Yes, they knew that. Let's say Meredith, Bree, you guys are defensive coordinators. Who's the best player on that offense, on the Browns offense?
Nick Chubb.
Yes. There you go. So what do you do as a defensive coordinator? You stack the box. You make it really hard for Nick Chubb, their best player, to beat you. You feel much more comfortable forcing Baker Mayfield to throw the ball, which why wouldn't you? He was not a good quarterback. And there's nothing wrong with saying that. I don't hate Baker Mayfield because I say he was not good this year. I don't buy into everything was based on injuries. I don't, because there were a lot of things that he did that weren't throwing. He was seeing things that weren't there. He wasn't reading the field well. There were a lot of things that weren't, well, he has his harness and, you know, it debilitates him. That's not all of it. That might be part of it, but that's not all of it. So and these defenses were like, oh, well, we're going to force Baker Mayfield to throw. Why wouldn't they do that?
Yeah, wasn't it? I feel like it was the first game after the report of Baker's torn labrum coming out. I feel like that game, Baker had a really good passing game, and he was doing a lot of deep balls, and he was throwing accurately. And so while the harness definitely held back and the injury held back, sure, Baker Mayfield was still capable. But he just didn't get the job done. And if we want to go back to what Kevin Stefanski said with Baskin and Phelps today, he said he's never going to use injuries as an excuse, ever. Yeah. As you shouldn't. So,
Brittany, no, and he was medically cleared. He said he was good to go. Like, these are all things, when a coach hears this about his starting quarterback, he's going to keep playing him. Right. He's going to keep playing him. Because, you know, you say, well, he's injured. If he's not speaking up, if he's not being honest about how he actually feels, the coach is not a mind reader. He can't just be like, well, you know, he's playing like, no, at that point, he was just playing bad because he sucked. Like, that's what, if I were the coach and I saw that, I'd be like, okay, well, you say you're feeling fine time after time. These medical professionals say that you're fine to go time after time. So you just might suck. You
Can
know?
I ask you a question, Brittany? What did you say was our total pass attempts?
Total pass attempts was 520.
Okay.
So it was 19 more than 2020. Also,
okay,
this is
I just
interesting...
looked this up, just out of
also,
curiosity.
Also, keep in mind there were 17 games rather than 16 games as well. Yeah. So, I mean, keep that in mind when you look at, you know, pass totals in a 16-game season versus a 17-game season.
Go ahead, Britt. You were going to say something.
So, two things here. This is the other thing that I shared. You know, when they said, well, you know, they should have run Nick Chubb more. Baker was throwing too much. Baker Mayfield averaged 30 pass attempts per game in both years. Nick Chubb averaged 16 rush attempts per game in both years. Like, these are... I'm not exaggerating. This is not bad math. These are facts. There wasn't much of a difference. And then I found this today, which was very interesting. Somebody put together this chart which said, here are the final game script adjusted pass rates for each team. The Cleveland Browns actually passed 3% less than they were expected to pass, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's in the bottom 8 of the league. So to everyone saying, well, they passed too much. They actually passed less than they were supposed to.
That actually is surprising.
I want to recreate my favorite Twitter argument to Brittany, because I had a little bit of time. I went through the replies because I had to. And my favorite response to Brittany's math, her correct math, by the way, that she posted on Twitter was, analytics is ruining football. Which was their way of saying, I can't argue the numbers. That's and I don't thing. Want to admit that I'm wrong.
Like, all of these people were so upset, and they're like, well, you're not an analyst. You can't break down offenses, blah, blah, blah. These assholes weren't doing that either. There was not one argument with any kind of statistics. You know why? Because statistics do not favor Baker Mayfield. There is no argument for Baker Mayfield going through numbers and analytics and statistics. There's not one. If there is, I challenge you to show me. Show me one statistic that says that he was good this year. One. You can't find it. It doesn't exist. And that's why they're so mad at numbers.
Yeah, I just looked
it
up.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Bree. I really had to recreate that because I thought it was funny.
No, you're totally fine. I was also just going to say, too, when you look at last year, we ran the ball a lot, and we probably ranked so high because there were a lot of games where we were winning and we had the lead, and we were kind of just coasting.
Sure.
This year, we had to play behind in a lot of cases, and I know someone was arguing that, well, we were only down by one lead, so why, I don't know why we would have just abandoned the run. I don't think he ever abandoned the run. It got to a point, though, where there were teams stacking the box, and we couldn't get anything going with the run. So, yeah, sure, we could have just handed the ball off every single time. It doesn't actually mean that the outcome would have been any different had we passed the ball and not executed, because when Baker was making passes, we had a pretty high drop rate. I just looked it up. The Browns ranked 12th in dropped passes this year, which was like a 4.2% rate based on their passing attempts. Surprisingly enough, the Chargers were number one. 33 passes dropped, 4.8%.
Wow. Yikes.
So it feels like the Browns were within the range, and there's a lot of really bad teams above them. So, like, that doesn't make you feel like you're in good company. Like, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are pretty high up there, which is surprising. The Chargers. But then outside of that, it's, like, the Panthers, the Jets, the Jaguars, the Dolphins. I mean, is that the company you want to be in? Probably not.
No.
Also, I want to defend Kevin Stefanski's play calling, because that's another argument that I hear a lot from people that I have conversations with, from callers on the radio to people on Twitter, was, oh, Kevin Stefanski didn't adjust his play calling. They figured him out. And I don't think that that was the issue. I think the issue was the offense wasn't able to get these plays off, because if they're stuffing the box, you have to opt for throwing. And Baker Mayfield wasn't making the throws, and his receivers weren't making the catches. And I don't think that criticizing the play calling was fair, because he tried. There's only so much you can do when the plays don't work on the field. I mean, he called, towards the beginning of the season, I think there were maybe two banana plays total, and both of them failed. I think there was a touchdown on one of them, and that was just because Jarvis Landry saw the play break down and saw a hole that he could run through, and because he is fast as lightning, found the end zone. So it was a broken play, but he scored on it anyway. We never saw those banana plays called ever again in the season. So don't tell me that Kevin Stefanski didn't adjust his play calling, because he did. It's just the offense on the field didn't get the plays to work. And if those plays worked, then nobody would be arguing about his play calling, and nobody would be criticizing him for it.
Nobody criticized it last season.
Right.
Nobody criticized Kevin Stefanski's play calling last season. And it was almost the exact same. Like, the splits, they're almost, they mirror each other. They really do. And, you know, I said once people, you know, they're all mad at Kevin Stefanski, and I said, you know, you can drive a car with four flat tires, but you're not going to make it very far. And that's what I feel like he was trying to do with the Browns offense. You can only, what do you expect the coach to do with a quarterback who cannot throw to receivers who cannot catch? What do you want that offense to look like? You can't just run Nick Chubb into oblivion. You can't. And you can't depend on Dearness Johnson to hide a bad quarterback. He is good. He is serviceable. He is not Nick Chubb. He's not even Kareem Hunt. Those two, you could work together. You could hide a bad quarterback, maybe go a little bit further in the playoffs. You could not do that this year. That was not an option. It just wasn't.
Yeah. And the other thing is the Browns were one of the most penalized teams in the NFL. I just looked that up too. They ranked number 7. And you want to know who our number 1 most penalized player was? Wyatt Teller.
Ooh. Oh yeah, he did every game.
Yeah, I mean, false start. he was mostly holding, and I think one could argue that he seems to get a lot of holding calls that actually don't look like holding calls. But I'm just kind of going down the list here, and so I'm looking at like all the penalties that we had on the offensive line, and then that's the other thing: you're starting behind the sticks, or you get to a 3rd and 2, and you get a holding call, and then you have to march right back. I mean, how many times were we starting an offensive drive behind the sticks? It was a lot. That puts you in a really bad position from not only a play caller standpoint, from running your offense. That's not easy to do.
No.
Right. And if you talk to any former player, because I have, and they all say the same thing on holding penalties. For the most part, and I've said this before on our podcast, a lot of people will hold on every single play because it's the risk versus reward.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reward is higher than the risk of holding. Like, it's not like an offensive interference. It's not like a pass interference that's going to take you half the distance to the goal, or, you know, something that's going to be an automatic first down. I think, what is it, like a 5-yard penalty? So people are going to hold on every single play and then just hope that the refs don't call it. And I agree, Bree. There were a lot of Wyatt Teller holding penalties that I was scratching my head on and saying, that doesn't look like holding. And then Myles Garrett gets held
and doesn't get called.
The yellow flag is nowhere to be found.
Yes.
So yeah, there. It's funny because I never try to blame the refs. I hate the, you know, oh, the refs lost the game. Like, cause that is never the case. Like, if you're in a position where one bad call costs you the game, it was never your game to begin with. But to have the numbers there, I guess facts don't care about my feelings. I guess I have to accept that the Browns are more penalized than most other teams in the league.
Yeah.
Analytics ruining football.
All right, Brittany, you got to give us a scoop on Facebook.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so what I'm going to do here is just read you some of my favorites that I have screenshotted. And mind you, I mean, there's like thousands of comments on each post because I just went to the regular Cleveland Browns Facebook.
Okay.
So there's a lot of gold in there if you ever want to go digging.
I wonder who runs that page.
I don't know who runs it. It's
whoever does. I feel for them.
I know. I was like, they don't get paid enough.
No. I know. As someone who runs professional social media, like, the mute button is our friend.
Yes. So we'll just go through some of these quickly. Number one, I thought people from Harvard were supposed to be smart. Andrew Berry said to himself, sure, I'll continue allowing Freddie Stefanski to keep calling his own offense.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, I will not accept Kevin Stefanski slander, especially, like, Freddie Kitchens, really? No.
All right. Stefanski and Baker have to go. You have one good player and you don't use him. Your quarterback sucks and the only thing your receivers seem to be able to catch is COVID.
I mean, that's actually pretty, that's pretty creative. Like, not gonna lie.
All right, here's the sad one. This season was more depressing than 2015, 16, and 17 combined. At least we had no expectations back then.
Gosh.
Come on, man.
Not.
1-31 stretch, and this is the one that bums you out the most.
Also, I'm pretty sure our wide receivers were like the only group that didn't catch COVID.
Right.
They can't catch anything.
They can't even catch COVID. All right. Scott says, for the love of God, get rid of Mayfield and Stefanski. I can't believe I actually had hope for this team this season, but you proved once again how utterly idiotic it is to have any faith in you. That guy's on a ledge.
Hurtful.
They are in their feelings.
Oh, yeah. Here's two more. Stefanski, take a bow for imploding this year with horrendous play calling and game management. The guy underneath, his name's John. This is a Baker bro. I can't wait till next year when Baker's 100%. He will be shutting a lot of mouths. Last year when he got us a win in the playoffs, all you haters were all on his jock. Now he plays with a lot of injuries, dealing with COVID and the problems with the supposedly number one receiver, not to mention some questionable play calling.
Oh boy.
And you all want to run him out of town. Next season when we are back playing strong, remember all the crap you and all talking now, and be thankful he stuck around. That's with no punctuation.
I was going to say, are there any periods in that?
Nothing.
That's Baker's burner account on Facebook.
One long sentence. Oh, this one was horrendous.
I feel like Baker would use punctuation. Like, no. I don't know. I can't see Baker writing one long, winded, no punctuation sentence. Like, he's a little smarter than that.
Yeah. This one is terrible. Like, on so many levels. John says, trade for Watson and pay all his legal BS to go away and make media blackout toward him so he can focus on football only. If you got to make room for him at the Berea facility, do it. LOL.
Ugh.
Yeah.
How disgusting is it that people are just so willing to brush off sexual assault allegations?
I saw a poll the other day. It was like, well, what are your reservations about this? I was like, I don't know, the 22 civil suits and that you might be giving a contract to a sexual predator.
Yes,
like that wasn't even an option on this poll. So yeah, that was fun.
People overlook that a lot, and it bugs me because I feel like that it is something that needs to be taken into consideration. But like we said at the beginning of the podcast, people, like, when it comes to women, people just don't care.
That's true. This one was probably my favorite. This was in response to Andrew Berry's press conference. Corey says, besides five things that stood out, I have five letters that stood out about this coaching staff that needs to happen. F-I-R-E-D.
Oh my gosh. These people think they're so creative.
That's going to be my first word when I play the Wordle in the morning.
There you go. We can end it on that one because that was my favorite one, I think.
Oh my god.
That is... I'm going to have to get on Brown's Facebook.
Oh my god. It's terrifying. Is it better or worse than Reddit?
Reddit, I feel like, is not idiots for the most part.
True.
I feel like Reddit has a pretty good logical mix of people that don't sound like that.
Yes.
Although I think the biggest difference between Facebook and Reddit, and I'm not necessarily talking about just like the sports pages, but just the website as a whole, is that there are actually people under the age of 40 on Reddit.
Exactly.
Like,
yes.
There are teenagers on Reddit all the time. Like I've told you guys my favorite page is Am I the Asshole? And like anytime someone comes on with like something happened between me and my partner, this is how I reacted, Am I the Asshole for it? And every like 14-year-old on Twitter is dump him. Get rid of her. Like, you can tell they're teenagers.
Yeah, like, I'm going to have to go scrub these Facebook posts and make sure my dad isn't on there responding.
That is, like, the one thing that I'm so grateful for my parents is that neither of them have any social media. My mom had Facebook for about 12 seconds and said nope and got right off. I think my dad has, like, a LinkedIn or something, but he doesn't use it. I think he only got it because his company wanted him to. But yeah, like, I'm so grateful my parents aren't on social media. And every once in a while, I'll like send my parents tweets, just from like either news or something funny. And they know my Twitter handle. Like, I know my dad has like done the thing where you go to twitter.com and then look up somebody's handle. Like, he has done that for me before. So he knows what my handle is and he knows what I may or may not say, but they leave it alone. Neither of them are into the social media thing.
What a way to end this show. It was a long one, you guys, but I'm happy we did this. This was good.
Yeah.
This is the first time in like weeks that all of us have been together too, because it's either like I've been out or I think I've been out more than anything.
Yeah. Can I ask you one last question before we sign off here? Are you rooting for any team in the playoffs? Are you kind of just like meh? Like, were you watch without any rooting interest? Or are you like rooting for anyone?
I'm not. I don't care about anyone.
Yeah.
So I was asked this on our show the other day. It was kind of like a bit of like everyone has to choose a team. So I chose the Arizona Cardinals because they are the second worst team in the NFC to make the playoffs, ahead of only the Eagles. And as a resident Washington football fan, I will never cheer for the Eagles in any way, shape, or form. But I was like, they're terrible. And I love an underdog story. Plus, I love Cliff Kingsbury and I love Kyler Murray. So I was like, you know what? And also, like, if I have an assignment to follow this team, it's going to be a short assignment because they're probably going to get knocked out on Monday anyway. So, like, I chose the easy route.
Yeah, I'm just going to enjoy.
Like, I was like, it's an underdog story. Go Kyler Murray and your 5'7 self.
Anyone but the Steelers is my opinion right now, honestly.
Yeah.
So, good with that. I'm going to root for the underdogs, I think. That's what I always tend to do. All right. That wraps us up, you guys. I hope you guys have a good night. I hope you guys all enjoyed listening. Again, send us a note. We love to hear from you. Rate us and review us if you can. You can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we'll chat with you all next week.